Thank you. I would like to acknowledge the work of my colleagues in Guatemala, Juan Carlos Verdugo, Lidia Morales, Carmen Arriaga, Anabella Perez, Sully Hernandez, and Francisco Zamora, and also the chair of my dissertation committee, David Grambowski, who's helped me think through a lot about how to go forth with an assessment or an evaluation of this intervention. Is this how I just here? Okay. No relationships to disclose. So I am going to provide some background about Guatemala, describe the intervention, go through a conceptual model I've used to begin to carry out this evaluation, describe the study population and the data that I've been using, what the research aims are, go through some results, and then finish up with some challenges, lessons learned, and next steps. So Guatemala is a country of 14 million people. About 40% of the population live on a dollar a day or less. And the indigenous Mayan population, depending on how it's defined, is between 40-66% of the population, depending if it's the definition of traditional dress or the language that's spoken or self-identification. Over 20 languages are spoken within the country. There is an internal conflict from 1960 to 1996, which really marks the current situation as well. Over 200,000 people were killed or disappeared, and about 10% of the population at the time was displaced. So peace accords was signed around 15 years ago, but still there's a lot of distrust and uncertainty about government programs and about outsiders as well. In terms of health services, I'm focusing on health, the next one on services, has, despite being a middle-income country, low-middle-income country, has some of the worst indicators in the region. According to the recent preliminary results of the National Reproductive Health Survey, the infant mortality rate is 30 per thousand, and child mortality rate is about 42 per thousand live births. And there are key disparities comparing lowest and highest wealth quintiles. And chronic malnutrition has been continued to be one of the major problems, with around 43% of children 3 to 59 months in the most recent survey with stunting, and for indigenous children that's much higher. Service coverage is also suboptimal for key maternal and child health services. Pregnant women who only received one prenatal care visit was about 43%. Postpartum care, about a quarter of women receive it nationally. Immunization of children aged 12 to 47 months with complete schedules, just over half. And for children 1 year of age, around 70%. So it's still below the recommended amount of immunization. The standard of care in Guatemala at the primary level is a standard Ministry of Health health posts, with about one or two auxiliary nurses working out of posts like the one that in this photograph in the Department of Alto Verapaz. And there, people are referred to Ministry of Health centers. And then there's also another standard of care that was started in 1997 that currently covers or provides services to about a quarter of the population. It's called the Program to Expand Coverage, and it's mostly an ambulatory model. The non-governmental organizations are actually the primary care providers that sign agreements with the Ministry of Health, and they have a team that's a doctor and a nurse, doctor or a nurse, and one or two health technicians or auxiliary nurses, and they work with a community network of volunteers. So in that context, a coalition of organizations within Guatemala came up with their own primary healthcare model. It's called the Modelo Incluyente de Salud, or the Inclusive Health Model. And it's a demonstration project that's been going on since 2004 with European Union funding. And it's going to continue through 2012 with that funding, and then Ideally, funding will continue through the Ministry of Health, but that's being negotiated. And serving about 20,000 people. The primary care providers are community health agents or have training similar to auxiliary nurses and actually have been recognized by the School of Nursing within Guatemala. They're bilingual, Spanish and Quiche, or Spanish and Mam, which are the two sites, the primary languages that are spoken. And they work in teams out of clinics and provide ongoing care. And they serve, there are about 14 providers per 10,000 people. Services are offered free of charge to the entire catchment area, and a proactive approach is used as well, so not just stationed in clinics, but actually going out and doing routine family visits as well. And cost estimate was done by an economist in 2008, based on there not previously being infrastructure or personnel in place, and the cost was estimated to be at about $19 per person in one site and $27 in the other. So those are the two sites. One is in San Juan Ostuncalco, in the Department of Quetzaltenango, and the other in the Boca Costa of Sololá. So what's the model look like? There is a provider in a clinical setting and then a family visit conducted by another provider where he's interacting with the female head of household, who's usually the one who's at home at the time of a visit. At this point, doing a risk assessment, which is a key part of the family program. There's also a community program as well, which isn't the focus of that I'm evaluating. And there's a support and referral team that includes somebody with public health training, who's the coordinator, a doctor and a nurse, somebody who coordinates the community programs, another person who coordinates family programs, and then somebody dedicated to data entry and an accountant. The services are a combination of preventive and curative care to all age levels within the population. Basic preventive care, curative care for acute illness, and then follow-up with chronic conditions that are identified, and responding to emergencies, and then diagnosis and referral to anything more complicated. And then with the family visits, the main intent is to identify or categorize family as high, medium, or low risk, and then to follow up with the families that are higher risk more frequently or to refer. The conceptual model that I have been using for looking at what the program has been able to achieve is based largely on the model developed by Ronald Anderson and dividing up factors into predisposing, enabling, and need categories. And the assumption that I have is because of the way that the model is designed that should increase some key service delivery measures, quality of care, coverage, and equitable utilization. And that in turn could increase or improve health outcomes and reduce child malnutrition and mortality. So equitable utilization is really, according to Ronald Anderson when he defined it, is that the need factors are what's determining the use of services is need primarily, rather than other social factors. I am looking at families and individuals that are receiving the intervention and using the project data set as my primary source of data. There are hundreds of sociodemographic variables because a census was done and clinical records are updated on an ongoing basis, and the census is updated as well. So there's a lot of information to work with. And then I am going to be doing a comparative analysis with the CDC-supported National Reproductive Health Survey once the data set, the complete data set is available. So my first aim is looking at the levels and variation, the quality of care, the intervention coverage for focusing on women and children, and also looking at utilization. So vaccination coverage in one-year-olds started at a lower rate. The green triangle in 2002 is from a reproductive health survey. So the program areas started at a lower rate and have gotten up to above 90% of vaccination coverage in both of the sites. And the national average is still It is around 70%. In terms of pre and postnatal care coverage, the 2002 national average was higher than what the program started out with, and that was around 50% people get having at least one prenatal visit, and the program's now gotten up to the over 90% of women in each site getting at least one prenatal visit, and that's actually similar to what the national average is. And then postnatal visits, that's where there's a real difference of this program. Because of the population approach, women are identified and then followed up with, I think, more in a more constant way. And so that's been really an accomplishment of getting up to around close to 100% of women who do deliver wind up getting a postnatal visit, whereas on a national average, it's only about a quarter who do. In terms of utilization of services, I looked at families to see the bottom rows looked at families in which no clinic visits were made per year, and I don't have comparative information from for national average there, but it started out around 30-50%, in part because of this distrust and also maybe feeling not feeling that there was need for use of services, and that has really diminished to around 10% or so of families that where nobody in the family winds up using services. And then, let's see. In terms of quality of care, what I decided to look at, because I'm mostly using clinical records, is the prescription of the recommended drug according to the Ministry of Health guidelines for pneumonia for children 1 to 4 years old. So amoxicillin is the drug of choice, and across the board, any antibiotic being prescribed is very high. It's almost always the case, but it wasn't always the drug of choice. And that can be for different reasons, but there's a very clear trend there of increasing use of the correct or the recommended antibiotic. The next research aim looked specifically at the contribution of the predisposing, enabling, and need variables in explaining the variation in equity of utilization. So trying to get at how much need, getting back to the Anderson model, how much need is explaining the use of services. And the proxy that I used for need was that risk classification that's done during the family visits. So this is where I'm getting into, sort of more preliminary parts of this part of my dissertation, but I've run a regression analysis looking at the predisposing, enabling, and need variables, and found that the variables that didn't appear to have real influence in determining the use of services were education, the primary labor activity, a wealth index, and family type and language. And then the ones that wound up influencing the use of services or having a p-value that was significant at below the 0.05 level were religion, although in the two different sites, it's actually the incident rate ratio or the coefficient was different for the was the opposite in both sites. So I've kind of discounted that as really being something that's influencing the use of services because it's not the same. Distance, which often winds up being a determinant of the use of services, wound up being important. And the risk level also did, so that people who are classified as lower risk were actually less likely to use services. People who are higher risk were more likely to use services. So that is what the program had intended. So challenges, conclusions, and next steps. I have found that using routine clinical data that's not designed for research requires a lot of time to prepare for purposes of analysis. It's taken me a good year or so to get everything into a usable form. But it's also a very, very valuable resource, and it's something that can have direct impact on a program being able to change the way it does work and to find that it's useful to be gathering all the information that health workers tend to gather. Some of the key service delivery measures wound up being higher than the national average, and I'm gonna go through a process of doing exact matching or one-to-one matching using the CDC supported National Reproductive Health Survey data set once that becomes available. It happens to be about the same time frame of what I was looking at, and it goes back from 2008-09 period, 4 years or so. So I'm going to be able to look at service delivery measures and also look at health outcomes, malnutrition, and mortality. And I've also found that this US-based conceptual model, I was sort of skeptical about how useful it was going to be, but found that it actually has been quite useful in assessing the equity in use within the population that I've been working with. And in terms of next steps for this model specifically, it's been extended already to one district within Sololá, one of the two sites. It's already reached out to a larger population there. And there's negotiation underway for further extension, likely to begin in 2012. And so it would reach out to about seven districts in coordination with the Ministry of Health. That's still to be determined exactly how that's gonna look, how similar it will be to what's been done versus if pieces of that will be implemented in the future. So thank you very much, and we'll take questions, I guess, at the end.